You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome to another fabulous episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. I'm your host, Michael Kushner, and I'm so excited to be bringing this episode to you. This is a really, really special episode. I know that we talk a lot about, spiritual and emotional aspects to creating theater and multi-hyphenating. But this is like a very practical approach. It's literally about money and changing the psychology of money and steps of revisiting money. And it's just a topic that I sort of feel like everyone has questions about and there's like no answers. But this episode is really cool because I got answers. I'm sort of in awe in Jodi and her energy and what she was saying. The episode's a little longer than normal, but I think it's worth every second. We're also probably going to do another episode too because there's more to talk about. But this episode is also really deeply personal. I go into it and parts of my past that I haven't really talked about in this podcast before. So, go there with me. And it's emotional to talk about certain things, but I really hope you enjoy it, the episode. And some exciting things happening I can't wait to share with you and announce. I haven't really talked about any projects that I'm working on, but mainly because we haven't been able to announce them yet, but there's some really exciting things happening. And I really feel the support from listeners. I really love when you reach out and share with me that you are listening to it or something was inspiring to you. And please rate, comment, subscribe, tell your friends and your family. It's really, really important. It's, it's how people find out about this. Yeah, I love speaking with you and to you and for you. And I really love this episode and I really hope that you can take something away with it. So let's get into it, right? Follow on social media at Dear Multi-Hyphenate, at The Michael Kushner. That's on Instagram and TikTok. And if you want to be a part of Dear Multi-Hyphenate, email me at dearmultihyphenate@gmail.com. And let's talk about whether or not you would like to come on the show, or we could discuss privately or work together, whatever it is. I want to be a resource for you. And you can also buy my book, which is available on the Rutledge Publishing website or Amazon or Rutledge. I said Rutledge. What did I mean? The Drama Bookshop. That's what I meant. I'm tired. It was a long day. You can get involved that way as well. I'm also working on a very big workshop. It might be like a 10-week workshop, which I'll tell you about soon, but that's going to be really interesting. All right, let's get into Jodi. Jodi Carter, CPA, has spent decades helping individuals, couples, and families from all different financial levels and circumstances make countless choices. This unique view sparked her desire to teach people how to live their best lives. Jodi founded Financial Insight Training to help people shift their lives from stress to freedom. As a lifelong supporter of the arts, Jodi knew she had to create a program specifically tailored to the unique needs of artists who live with fluctuating income and need specialized guidance for managing their finances. The IFCOM paradigm is the framework for creative people to live as thriving artists. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Jodi Carter. How are you?
Hi, Michael. I'm so good. How are you?
This is really exciting to talk about because I was telling you, I have a lot of guests that we talk about, like the spiritual, the artistic, energies, being like, just do what you love. But I think a lot of questions I get from students, from clients, from whoever, from listeners is, okay, but how do I do what I love? And a huge how is the financial aspect of what we do. Wow. Hello.
Right.
Of what we do. See, the inner demons are coming out even as I talk about that. Because it's like, you know, I'm sure you've heard this, but it's like I sort of have my own method to my madness, but I'm also at the same time like, I don't know what I'm doing half the time. And I, you know, run multiple businesses. So we're going to get into that. Where are you from? We're meeting each other for the first time right now, too, which is right. Amazing. We were introduced by the incredible Alexis Cepeda, who is so yes. fabulous. Where so are you fabulous. From? What's your background? What do we have to know about you?
Well, I'm a New York girl, originally born in the Bronx.
Nice.
Grew up mostly in New Jersey and back in Midtown Manhattan now. Professionally, I am a CPA, certified public accountant, and a thriving tax practice, helping individuals, small businesses. But in my work doing that, I was much more interested in people's lives and how they were managing their finances. And I got really curious about how to help people feel more confident, because just what you're pointing to, you're saying, well, I have my ways, but I don't know if it's right. Everyone feels that way because no one taught us anything. And I really wanted to become that teacher and trainer that was helping people. So that's how we ended up here.
I already know that I'm going to make this a required listening episode for everyone, because that is, you couldn't have said it better. Like, we were not taught how to. And what's so annoying and stupid about it is, like, I try to teach what I know to my students so much, but I could see their brains going like, you know what I mean? Mainly, probably because I can't explain it well enough, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not saying it's their fault. I think I can't explain it well enough. And I also think the topic of money is scary to people. And I think, I think how people faint when they see like blood or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think people immediately go, what's that, when it has to do with money. So what is your, and this is an artist podcast for television, film and theater industry, personnel. So when it comes to being an artist, what do you think is the first thing that we have to know about money?
So I work with a lot of people in the arts, and part of that reason is because I'm really listening to the special challenges that they have. And the first thing that I really want people to have is a new language for how to deal with this. And so I created what I call the IFCUM paradigm. And IFCUM, which is a word that I have since trademarked because I thought it was so precious and I want to make sure that it's used appropriately, is about that fluctuating and uncertain income that all artists and creatives grapple with. Multi-hyphenates are working from many different sources, and that the income that they have can be sporadic. It can be very high at times. There can be huge lulls. How do you manage that? And we have to start with shifting the way that we think about it. And then from there, we can start to work on a plan. So the first thing I want people to know is that IFCUM is not a barrier to success. Full stop. The problem that many people have and why your students or listeners are going to immediately feel a little guarded around money is because they are told the starving artist paradigm is the only way.
And we also have our own relationships to money, right? Especially yes. especially with the conversation of privilege being a huge conversation that many people are talking about. It's like, you know, well, you can't have a seat at this table because you come from this amount of privilege, or you can't sit at this table because you're not privileged enough. And I feel like there's a lot of shame especially when it comes to spending or not spending. And of course, the starving artist mentality is really big there. It's people think that, we're gonna be artists have to, and there's no shame, and I say this all the time, because people do like waiting tables and they're good at it, but they think that they're gonna be waiting tables till 4 in the morning, living with 10 roommates in a roach-infested apartment in the city, scrounging away, quote unquote, wasting their life away as a waiter or whatever. And you're so right in terms of like the starving artist mentality is really real.
We have to take back the narrative as an industry, and we have to be able to say to each other that there is a way to manage your finances, however it's working. You know, when I speak to someone, when I first heard the term multi-hyphenate, I immediately thought about, because I was already using the word IFCOM with people, I wasn't thinking, you know, the triple threat or the person that produces and directs and acts. I was thinking of the person who does catering and is auditioning and acting. I was thinking of the person who does a social media business while they're writing a book, right? And so, like, all of that to me falls under the same thing. Whatever jobs you have on your path to where you're trying to get to your vision, all matter. And the fact that we call these things a side hustle, or we talk about the unwanted jobs and all of those types of descriptions, it's not empowering people. And if you are doing those jobs that are outside of the career path that you're aspiring to, that doesn't mean that it's not all part of the path, because if it's supporting you financially and giving you the stability to pursue creative things, then that is part of who you are and what you're doing. And we want to be able to embrace it all and then make good decisions. And that's the part that we all missed training on.
I try
So
to, sorry, I didn't mean to
that's
interrupt.
okay.
I try to, the narrative I try to put with the side hustle is that sometimes small theater makers have a small business that they just sort of keep to the side, and like a personal training business or whatever. And I write about this in my book, How to Be a Multi-Hyphenate in the Theater Business. And they prefer to keep it to the side. When we embrace the multi-hyphenate aspect of us, it's when the small business then becomes a part of our artistic identity and informs the other hyphens. So
I
some
love that.
people have questioned why I sort, it's like an anti-label label. And some people question why I'm like, well, why sometimes they'll catch me saying, okay, well, I wouldn't consider that being a multi-hyphenate because, and there's one simple reason, and it's because of the cross-pollinating. Because for me, when we have a list of things that we do, like I'm an actor, photographer, producer, writer, podcaster, educator, but if I were to keep going on that list, right, I could say easily husband, dog, dad, social media person, house renovator. And then I start listing all my personality traits, my hobbies, my interests. And I don't want to muddle that. I don't want. And if I were to have what I've coined a for now job instead of survival job, if I were to have a for now job that didn't have to do with my artistry, I wouldn't want to incorporate that as a part of my artistic identity because that's not, because I don't want that to be a part of my artistic identity. If I was to be serving tables, I'd want to keep that separate because that's what I'm doing for now until I make it on Broadway or until I book this next gig or until whatever. And that's the only mentality that I want people to sort of differentiate, not incorporating the shame aspect, because I think there's a difference. I think there's the I'm so shameful, I'm not going to acknowledge any part of that aspect of my life. Or do we acknowledge it and go, this is where I am right now. This is what's helping me pay my bills. And I could differentiate the two between what is helping me do that and this artistry and the goals that I'm setting.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the things that I try to get people to see is that you cannot separate life and financial. So people talk about a financial life. That's not a thing, right? Your finance involves life, life involves finance. And so taking the approach of looking at all of this through money, you have one life. And so those jobs that are giving you stability and the ability to have creative pursuits are part of the foundation of everything that you're building. And I think it's so important to look at it from that lens because otherwise, there's a part that you are bristling at instead of looking at and saying, this is what's getting me where I'm trying to get to. And we need to be able to look at that. One of the important reasons is that the scramble and desperate feeling that comes from the starving artist narrative can be stopped when you stop thinking that you have to take every job. So when we get clarity about your
I love
financial
it.
picture, you then are able to say, oh, I don't have to work as hard at this day job or whatever I'm pursuing there. But also, as more artistic opportunities come in, when you have clarity about your finances, you don't have to accept every one of those jobs either.
I'm literally obsessed with you because I say this just, I say this from the guise of headshots. I think what has worked really well for me, and again, doesn't necessarily, it's not going to necessarily work for everyone, but for me, what I have noticed is when I do not go to every audition and I say no to auditions that are not going to serve me and I'm not going to serve the project, and I know it because I'm looking at myself as who I am as an artist. When I get into those rooms that I know I'm going to do well, I do well because I haven't spread myself so thin to the point of I'm just trying to get into every room. Or, even when we're aware of hearing no, or sorry, it's not this time, even when you're auditioning, it still is a no, and that still is hard to hear. And I think reserving those opportunities for yourself and being like, there's a better chance for me to get a maybe or a yes to this because of what I can offer, the no's become less and the work becomes less. There are so many auditions that I get where I'm like, I should have been working on this for 3 years and I'm not ready for this because I'm not interested in it. My heart's not in it. I don't have the skill set for this. These are asking for notes that I can't hit yet, or a sound that I don't hit, or a movement that I don't do. I'm going to say no to it. But yet, I think artists are so pressured to say yes to every single thing that comes across them because this could be the big break. And they've heard things like, just show up. You never know what'll happen. I don't think that is a healthy model to have a career in.
You're absolutely right. And one of the things that you're really pointing at is this scarcity abundance model, but there's a lot of middle ground there. What's in between scarcity and abundance is choice. And we need to move ourselves from this feeling of scarcity and this feeling of I have to do everything. I'm going to throw everything in and try to figure it out. When you go to an audition or you're pursuing something creative and there's financial pressure in the background, that's what shows up. That's what they see across the audition table, right? So when we start to focus on our finances and we take this moment, and I know it's scary, but we take the time to actually look and we create an understanding for ourselves. That is game changing. When the pandemic hit, and a lot of the people that I knew and were working with were like, the industry is shut down. I got two kinds of contacts right away. One was people that I had been working with for a few years who were sending me notes saying, thank God we've been doing this work because I know I'm okay. I'm just not clear for how long or how to navigate this unemployment craziness. When you have time, can we talk? But I know I'm okay. And the others were people saying, I'm in a group and everyone is panicking. Is there any way I can introduce these people to you? Can you do a workshop? And I would go in and I would just try to calm everyone down. And the folks that were not prepared were really scared. And I had to tell them, you know, the unemployment will come. And I know this is terrifying right now, but it will sort itself out. The preparation, not just for something unbelievable like a pandemic, where we couldn't have even wrapped our minds around it before, but just the time between jobs, being prepared for that, because we go through this cycle of the ups and downs. And the goal of IFCOM is to even it out, to make sure that you are prepared for the lulls in income. And when you have that happening, your confidence is boosted creatively and in every part of your life.
And I love that you say, according to your book, Financial Insight, I love that you say the solution to financial challenges is not more money. Can you go into that a little more?
Oh, yes. So one of the things that I realized very early in my career, you know, I was in this very unique position to look into everyone's financial lives, all of my clients. And so there were people making significant amounts of money and people making modest amounts of money. And I'm in my 20s and they're coming to me with questions and I'm looking at all of their data and I'm saying, wait a minute, why are these people, some of them with large amounts of money flowing through their lives, in debt, stressed, struggling? And some of them are doing fine. And then I'm looking at people with very modest amounts of money, IFCOM earners as well. And some of them are struggling and some of them are doing fine. And I'm like, wait a minute, it's not the quantity of money. Because I thought more money, more better. This is what I'm going to pursue. And then I started to realize there was a quality to people's decision-making that was all the difference. And that's how I came up with the concept of financial insight, by really examining what was working for people in any income level with any amount of money. And it comes down to exactly two things. One is knowing what matters most to you, your values, the things that you really want to focus on in your life. And the other is an accurate knowledge of your data, really knowing your finances. And if you know your data and you know your values, we can then align those things to make good decisions.
Okay. I'm obsessed with that, especially from a perspective of someone that has been living in the city for a year, right? Mm-hmm. Even like 22 years old. Yeah. What about the terrified college kids that have no idea what to do and how to start? Where do they start? Where does the person that has not yet moved to the bigger city and they have dreams and goals, what the person that just started their for now job, what about them? How does someone start this mentality? What are the practical things? What do they do with their money? How do they put it away? How do they save receipts for their CPA or for TurboTax or whatever it is? Like, how do they even start?
Yeah. So I love working with young people, like as they're emerging, you know, into adulthood, because they weren't taught. And so the first thing we have to do is get clarity about our relationship with money, and then start to focus on moving money in the direction of the things that we most want. So if you are someone that stability is so important to you, then when you're looking for that first apartment and the choice is, you know, on your own or roommates and how much you can spend and where you can live, we want to make sure that you're not taking your paychecks and saying, everything is going to this. We want to make sure that there's some money going to savings so that you start to feel that stability, right? If you are someone that, you know, sometimes folks are coming for the first time, but they have family support we want to make sure that we're using that wisely and not just assuming it'll always be there, because at some point, even with family support, you're going to want independence. And that's one of the big things that I find a lot of people that move to the city for the first time, and maybe they have some savings or they have some family help, or they just don't even know where they're starting. And they're saying, well, I'm going to figure it out. We want to focus on the way you want to feel when you're here in the city. If you want to be able to have a job that allows you to audition, we have to think about that when you're making those choices. One of my favorite stories from way back was someone that came to me, first job, so excited, I'm going to make $30,000 a year. And I found an apartment for $1,500 a month. I'm nailing it. I'm like, no. Because that $30,000, that's before they take the taxes out. You're not going to have enough to live. So we have to look at the bigger picture, right? We have to figure out what is actually going to work. So the first thing that I ask people to do is really look at their relationship with money. And as you said earlier, it's going to be different for everyone, right? It actually goes back to your earliest money memory. And if you think about the very first memory that you come up with when you think about money, there's going to be a thought about that, a reaction about that experience that you had, that when we pull that thread through to who you are now, you're going to recognize that you are still relating to money as that 5, 6, 7, 8 year old.
I have full chills.
You have a memory?
Can I share
please,
mine?
Please.
The first time that I realized that I felt weird about money was I went to this after school camp, and there was one time where I think it was because my dad was dating a woman that worked there, but it was an acting camp, and I was there for years. I had done this for years, but my dad started kind of dating this other person, and he was like, all right, you're going to go to this other after school camp, like 2 days a week. And I was like, okay, it didn't last long, but because I didn't like it and it was whatever. But I remember in the after school activities, it was very, very general after school activities things. Like it was like, there was like a gymnastics setup. And then the next day we'd go bowling and stuff like that. I never had pocket money at those events. I never, ever, ever, ever had pocket money at those things. So all the people, all of my like co-campers after school would immediately run to the snack bar and get their fries or get their this. And I never did. And I see a lot of connections. One, I never carry cash with me. Mm-hmm. I'm always really surprised when I have cash in my pocket. And whenever I find cash in my pocket, I immediately go to the like, ooh, what can I get with this? Like, it's like a hot dog or fries or something. Mm-hmm. Then the other psychology behind it is I've gone the opposite way. Well, I'm never going to feel like that again. I'm always going to get the fries if I want them.
Right. Amazing. Amazing. That thought, I'm always going to get the fries if I want them, probably shows up in more ways than you even realize just yet.
So many.
I know you recently bought a home, right? Mm-hmm. When you were house shopping, can you see the little kid that was going to get the fries?
Oh, he still is.
He
still is, with the new windows, with the doors, with the everything.
Yes. Yes.
But the thing about it is like, I'm aware of it. Like, because I came from a family that like, you know, it, it, I, I, We lived fine, but it wasn't, we, you know, def it wasn't the easy, like it wasn't the easiest, but like, you know, and I want to buy the house for my mom. I want to buy the next house that I buy. I want it to be for, and there's a part of me that like when I bought this house, it was for my mom as well, for my family, for them to come and relax and enjoy as well. And it's for everyone. And there's such an emotional psychology behind it as well, because like, you know, I compared myself growing up to other people's money experiences, and yeah, I'm always going to get the fries if I want them.
So we've just met, as you said at the top. So I'm going to ask permission. Can I coach you a little bit? Can I ask you a couple questions?
If you feel that this is going to, because I'm like a big like self-focused person in terms of like I don't like to be self-focused. If you feel like this is going to help in terms of like audience, I would love that.
Great. Absolutely. So when you what you just described about wanting to get the home for your mom and, everything is for all the people around you. When you look back now as an adult at the little kid who was seeing that other people could do things and you weren't able to, how would you describe that now as an adult?
Like in terms of like the emotional like language behind it, I guess it would be envy and maybe a little like, all right, now I'm gonna get really into it, okay? So I don't talk with my dad anymore, and I later, you know, when in the late 90s and early 2000s, like, because I grew up in Florida, because this is going to sound bougie, but it really wasn't, because it wasn't that expensive back then. And every Floridian had it, like, even if you didn't have like a big income. I went to Disney about once a month, because that's what you sort of did, especially on the 3-day weekends. And you got a park, you got the monthly, the yearly pass, and we didn't stay on property, cheap hotels. Like we did it like very cheap. But I later put two and two together and sort of discover that potentially my dad was doing this to get back at my mom for divorcing him. And I felt that energy, and I still feel that energy. So I feel like there's like an envy, but also this money is sort of used to sh get back or show off. Or used as collateral.
Yeah, that's great. Is that memory younger than the camp memory?
Older, a little
It's
older, like
old, a little older.
but just like 3 years.
Got it. So it sounds like there was a lot of punishment and reward kind of concepts around money. And
Yes.
a lot of people grapple with this in particular, but every single one of us is going to have a memory that is going to show us something. And the things that you're talking about, if we start to look now, if you came to me and said, we're working on a decision right now, we're looking at remodeling the house, or we're thinking about, shifting some funds around to take different kinds of vacations, whatever we're talking about, you're going to notice these feelings about punishment and reward showing up in all of your financial conversations. So when that happens, when you're working with a coach around something like this, I can point out the blind spots and say to you, okay, we have to take you out of this
Right.
conversation, because when we know your values, and that would be a whole separate thing that we need to do, the things that are most important to you, right? I'm definitely hearing career is important to you, family, but only you can really define what those specific things are. When we have that, we'll notice when punishment and reward is getting in the way of you pointing money at the things that are most important to you. So now I know you want practical stuff in this conversation. So let's get this to the point where people can hear how that works, right? So I was working with someone that was really struggling to find fulfillment in her career. And she wanted to pivot, but she couldn't figure out the financial challenge of that. You know, like if I leave this work and go get this other education, how am I going to make that happen? And we had to look back at what was stopping her. In her family of origin, there was a lot of scarcity. There was a lot of doing without. So even though she and her spouse had built all of this stability, they had savings. We mapped out the whole plan for how she could leave her job and go to school. She was still feeling this financial paralysis. She couldn't make the shift. And it all went back to going back to that younger self and saying, no, I hear you worried that we're going to run out of money, that this isn't going to work, that I'm taking the rug out from under the stability. But all of the data is here. And what I truly want is to make this career change. And so that my family can progress with me being happy in what I'm doing. That was when we were able to make the decisions. And she decided to actually go part-time in her job and part-time in school just to dip her toe, because that gave her more comfort. Miraculously, I say miraculously, but this tends to be what happens. When you start to align your choices, when you start to say, okay, the data all makes sense, and this does match what I really want in my life, the world opens up and things happen. Her husband ended up getting a promotion for significantly more money, and they needed to move to a place that was going to cost less. And everything started to work, and she was able to leave her job, finish school, start a new career. Their family was in place before their child went to school. Like, everything worked out and aligned, all because we were able to get that relationship with money clear and help her take the actual action steps. So when you ask about the practical, I'm going to say that we have to deal with the feelings first, right? Even if we just go with like basic things, there's a class you want to take, but you can't seem to find the money, but you also don't want to look at your finances. That's not going to work. And you may be thinking, oh my God, I cannot bring my financial picture to Jody because she's going to see how much I'm spending on takeout. And she's going to tell me that's where you're going wrong. Well, first of all, we're all doing that one. Like, that is the most common thing, right? But this is the thing that I see a lot of stuff on socials about, you know, people feeling like, stop telling me not to spend money and enjoy my life in order to be successful. That is 1000% right. We have to find the sweet spot for your life. Where do you want to point money? I want you to go out with your friends. I want you to go out for drinks. I want you to have your coffees, not to the point where you're not doing the other things that you want as well. Mm-hmm. So we have to be able to look at the data to find the balance. You know, you said something earlier about the shame, and I really want to point out that everyone grapples with these kinds of emotions. So when I speak in front of a group, or I'm working in a workshop, or even one-on-one, and I ask someone to give me three adjectives that describe their relationship with money. Do you want to have at it? Should I tell you what the big ones are?
Shame.
Yep.
Let me guess. Shame. What's a good word for like uneducated? Like shame.
Uncertainty.
Uncertainty. Mm-hmm. Uncertainty and shame, uncertainty and terror. Like let's throw in something about scariness.
Fear.
Like a fear.
Fear.
Yeah.
Wow. Fear. The top four are shame, regret, fear, and in the best of circumstances, uncertainty. That is what everyone is feeling. And I want you to know, this is not just artists. This is not just if-come earners. I will speak to someone with a significant income and savings and no debt and a home and all of the stability they could dream of, and they come to me with uncertainty. All coming back to because no one taught us. So we're all feeling fear, shame, regret, uncertainty, some variety of that. And then we're all afraid to talk about it. That's why I'm so excited to have opportunities like this to tell people, no, we need to talk about it.
I'm going to literally make this a required like homework assignment in my class. Like,
love it.
This is incredible. And I'm learning a lot. First of all, we're reading Barbara Streisand's book right now, and she lives by the, and I love this, like Rem, my husband and I have, and you know, we bought the house. I bought the house for Remy and for my puppy, you know, so you know what I mean? It's for my family to grow and for us to, we needed it emotionally. We're reading Barbara's book, and she says at the point of preparation, the universe will come together, will conspire and support you. I think that's what the quote is.
Yeah.
And to me, that's practical, because what you're saying about the dipping your, about the client that dipped her toes in and then her husband got, I've noticed that before where when you take that risk, it's another way of saying leap in the net will catch you. Right. Like there's always, please go with me here. And listeners, please go with me here as well, because I don't know everyone's personal lives, but oftentimes when I hear someone go, oh, I just, you know, I really want to move to the city. And I go, well, why don't you? And they say, I'm just saving up for it. I want to go, how long are you going to save up for it? Like what, like, maybe you do have a certain number, but I don't think that is actually what's holding you back. I think what's actually holding you back is fear, uncertainty, you know, those sorts of things. And I think people don't move to their big place, their dream city, or taking on their career because what they've heard. It must be so hard. It must be so hard. But I think that there's so much more holding them back. Like Remy and I were just in Puerto Rico, and we stayed at this beautiful hacienda in the mountains of Puerto Rico. I mean, we were there technically 2 days ago, but I'm still a little tan, which is nice. And there was someone there, and in this hacienda, it's like you stay with multiple people. You all have privacy in separate rooms and stuff. But the whole point is that you dine with the family that owns it, and you're all there sharing the space together, and you're meeting people. Well, there was this young woman who was there, and she kind of hung out with Remy and I on the last day we were there. And we got to know each other in that short amount of time. And this is the first time that she, and you know, Puerto Rico is separate, but it's this, you know, it's same, but different with, you know, the technicalities of the, you know, the land and where it is and stuff like that. And, but Puerto Rico was as far as she has ever been, and girl was terrified, and she was finally doing something for herself. And it was so like admirable, you know, and she was so open to talk about finances. I remember she in the middle of a conversation, she was like, y'all, she had this southern accent, it was from Ohio, it was very funny. She's like, y'all want to know how much I pay for my rent? And it was so funny to hear her talk about like her experiences and what was important to her and what was scary to her, the fact that she was like going to Puerto Rico by herself was like the biggest and best thing she's ever done for herself. And it was really kind of amazing. And then it makes me think with this conversation, what are people holding themselves back from because of their relationship to money?
Which is an
obvious question, but
There's two myths that I cover in my programs that you're pointing to in this. So I'm gonna go down both tracks.
Please.
First, I want to talk about the myth of uncertainty, and then I'm gonna talk about the myth of someday.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So the myth of uncertainty I talk about in the IFCOM course, and that is this notion that IFCOM earners are always going to have this uncertainty, and so they can't have stability. And when people are, you know, someone's saying to you, I'm going to move to the city, but you're saying, well, what's holding you back? It's their lack of belief that they can find the way to do it is really where that starts, right? And so we have to talk about, and I introduce in the IFCOM course, where these concepts came from. And it's because many years ago, people with steady income looked at folks without steady income and deemed them unemployed. And that's not true. If you have multiple sources of income, that doesn't mean that you aren't employed. It means that you have a business. You own a business. As an IFCOM earner, you own a business, and it's coming from multiple sources. And that'll would kind of bring us back to some of your earlier questions about some practical stuff. So we can come back there.
And I after. Do have follow-up questions. I do want to talk about someday, but I also want to talk about then. You know, we have a lot of Jewish open windows, right? A lot of so I want to then talk about incorporating and taxes and stuff like that. Then when, what does that mean? When is the right time to do that? So let's, I just want to like bookmark that.
We'll pin that. And we're going to come back to it after this. So, you know, first getting ourselves out of this myth of uncertainty and understanding you can be successful no matter which path you are taking, it's going to be uniquely yours. In order for you to get out of the myth of uncertainty, you have to start to define your vision of success. And success is not some end game. It is not some distant point in the future. It is your whole path. So if success at the beginning of your career means moving to the city and auditioning, that is success. You are doing it. Booking the gigs is a separate success. Not everyone is striving for fame and fortune. There are many paths here. There are many people who say, I just want steady work. That's not a just. I always ask them to take the just out of that sentence. I want steady work is a vision of success. And so we start working toward that. Now I want to turn to the myth of someday, because that same person that says, I'm going to move to the city, and you say, what's holding them back? They haven't set a time. They haven't said when. And until you, and you know, I actually joke about this in the course. I tell people to, you know, you have your calendar and your phone, pick up your phone, find me someday. It's not in there.
Wow.
And so we can't plan for someday. That means we have to pick a date. Now, a date is not a deadline. A date is what I like to call a working when. If you say, I'm going to move into the city in 5 years, great. Now we can start to make your data make sense. We can start to point money in the direction of that. Mm. But if it's someday, that's a myth. That's not something you're actually at work on. When I was living in New Jersey, I decided I needed to move myself into New York City. And I had debt at the time. I was just out of a divorce, struggling a bit. And this was before I created Financial Insight Training. I'm really the first student. I had to figure out how to move myself from everything I knew, from looking at my clients and the knowledge that I had, what was missing. And I came up with the missing information and created it for myself. But it wasn't until I said, I am going to move into New York City in 7 years, that I got to work seriously on the goal. And because I said that, that 7 years became 2 years before I moved.
Amazing.
And it was fear-based that I set out the goal for such a long period of time. But once you start with a date and you start working on it, a couple things happen. One, you realize whether or not it's a goal you actually want to work toward. It stops being like a mystery, like I'm going to move someday. If you pick a date and you start working on it and you're not feeling it, that's not your goal. Right. Now you can let go of that, put something else in its place that you want to give your energy to. Another thing that happens is that it propels you forward faster because you now have a reason to point money in the direction of things that matter most to you. Mm-hmm. So you're not just kind of waffling around trying to figure it out. It creates something. So I want everyone to set specific dates, month, day, year, on everything that they're dreaming about. And then we work with it from there. Not deadlines, working ones.
I'm literally obsessed with you.
Thank you.
It's so real. It is so real. And I always say, you know, first of all, you being your first client is so real because that's what Michael Kushner Photography was, right? Mm-hmm. I had to know the type of experience that I want in a headshot session. Because, you know, I was a child actor. I've had so many experiences, right? And figuring out how to present myself in the world today with the tactics that make a photo shoot good. Because I think so many clients were like, I love my photos. I think they're cool. I think they're great. I didn't love my experience. When I shot with this person, they did this or I do. But it was never about like them in this situation. They would always remove themselves from the situation. And I can almost guarantee you that it's never just the photographer's fault. And I don't mean to sound harsh about that, but I have seen incredibly successful photo shoots in this studio because the actor knows what they want and how they're going to get it. And if they don't know how they're going to get it, they ask and they're open. The unsuccessful headshot sessions that I see in the studio are when there is no goal setting, when there is no awareness of where they are in space, when they act like they've known everything and experienced everything, and they don't ask for help. I had a really amazing experience about asking for help in college that sort of was a tough pill to swallow for my ego, but ultimately it changed the game. My professor, Mary Casaro, we had this assignment in musical theater workshop. Yes. And she assigned me the song called Mama a Rainbow, which is a pretty well-known male-identifying song for male-identifying artists. I mean, it doesn't matter. Anyone could actually sing that song. What am I talking about? But in the musical, it's sung by one of the Marx Brothers. And part of the assignment was that we had to do a character analysis for it, right? And this is my senior year, and I was a snot-nosed senior who is constantly looking for his summer stop gig because I was like very goals. I was very goal oriented. I still am very goal oriented, but sometimes that got in the way of the process. So, and there's a difference, I think, and I'm sure you've experienced that, where there's like goal setting, but then there's like completely avoid, like completely being unaware of like the things that are like informing your process and who you are as a person. And I bullshitted the character analysis. I like totally bullshitted it. And I got that character analysis back with red ink all over it and basically just like see me on the bottom. And I walked into her office, I guess. And she was like, I know that you didn't read the script, the libretto. And I know you basically BS this. And I was like, well, I don't know. I tried. And I was like, I just couldn't find, I thought I was going to find the libretto. I thought I was going to find the script and I couldn't. And she opens up her drawer and puts down a stack of papers. And she, I think, said something like, and it was the libretto to the show, Minnie's Boys. And she was said something, I think, like, I'm one of six people that has this libretto. All you have to do is ask. And I was so ashamed, but also so inspired at the same time. And that's what I feel is missing with my clients sometimes, is that they just, and they don't want to ask. And I try to create the space for them to do it. Like another thing that drives my collection of photography is that I want to remain as accessible as possible. I don't have the cheapest rates in the city, but I certainly don't have the most expensive ones. But I provide such free information. I provide free information on my socials all the time. Tips, tricks, examples, do this, avoid this. Things that people technically should be paying me for. Information that people should be paying me for. My book is $34. I wrote a book for $34 and it's available for $34. And I still choose to give out that free information because I believe in accessibility. But it's really so interesting to see the people that don't want it. And I don't really know where that comes from, but my mentality is like, I'm not the one that uses these headshots in the auditions. You are. I can't tell you every single answer, but I can guide you to that. Like yesterday, I had a client who came in with basically two of the same outfits, and both of like one of the outfits sort of felt like him, and the other was just like a pretty lazy choice. And I said, I feel like this outfit doesn't serve you, but, and then I have some clothes here that I give people if, you know, we're figuring stuff out. And he put on this leather jacket and came alive. And I was like, just give yourself options. And that was what I loved about it, was he was so open to the situation. That he wasn't like, no, sorry, this is what I'm wearing. Like, this is what my manager said. I can't stray away from that. He was like, yeah, okay, cool, dude. Sounds good. Like, thanks so much for that. And it worked. And I give them the option too. Let's look at the picture. If it doesn't work, we change it. A sense of play. And that's what I think is probably interesting for you, is that you sort of approach your business with a sense of play. And I don't know how many people want to approach their money with a sense of play.
Play is so important when it comes to this. And I love what you're saying. You know, one of the things that you're really, I think, pointing to is our struggles with vulnerability. You know, I can talk to people about money all day. Getting in front of a camera, so hard for me. You know, the wonderful Alexa who introduced us has been working with me with social media. And I mean, you should watch some of our outtake videos because they are hysterical, because I implode because I'm in front of a camera. It's not comfortable for me. For all of the very talented people that, you know, are out there, creatives that I work with and that are your listeners, I am the triple non-threat. I cannot sing. I cannot dance. I cannot act. I have none of those skills. I'm very fortunate to feel comfortable speaking. But when you put me in front of a camera, like, you can't script me. I have to riff. I can only come from my thoughts in speaking, which can be challenging when you're, when I'm creating an entire course and my videographer had to sit there while I riff and do all of the editing. But, you know, it's that vulnerability, finding that in yourself. So in Financial Insight Training, the program is called the Fit Universe. I make sure that people understand, and I remind them constantly, this is a judgment-free zone. What that means is, I'm not judging you. It doesn't matter to me how much you're spending on different things. I'm not looking at it and saying right or wrong. And I'm never giving you advice. I'm teaching you how to make decisions. But even more important than me not judging you is that I have to make sure that you are not judging you. As you said earlier, we're all comparing ourselves. You know, someone will love their home. They will be in their home and they'll be like, God, I'm so pleased and I'm so proud of this. And then they flip on their TV or they go watch some videos on social and they see some celebrity's home and they feel diminished. Why are you feeling diminished? First of all, you have no idea whether or not that person is happy in their life. A big home does not mean that they are happier than you. And you may look at that and say, wow, that's amazing. I'd love to have that. And my first question would be, would you really? Right. Would you really want to spend on that? Is that really how you want to point the money? And so we have to get away from comparisons and judgments in order to really find our vision of success and move ourselves to the happiest we can be now and in the future.
For me, my identity as a New Yorker is really important to me. So when we started looking to buy, I was originally looking at like potential like brownstone opportunities, right? Because in my like vision, you're not a New Yorker until you own in New York.
Okay.
I don't know who told me that. I don't know.
I'm also going to say it's not true to anyone listening, but go on.
It's not true. That's the thing. But in my mind, I was like, you're not a New Yorker, Michael, until you own. Then you're a New Yorker. And all of the places that we didn't look at many because I was literally like, why am I buying this? Like, and Remy went to go do a show in Cape May, New Jersey. And I drove with Sandwich, our puppy. And he had actor housing to himself because it was a 3-person play starring Tony winner Karen Ziemba and her husband Bill. And they had their own house in Cape May, their own amazing place. So Actorhausen was this big house that belonged to Remy for a month and a half. So I brought Sandwich up and we were there for like 4 days. And Sandwich was happier than a pig in shit. And he had a backyard and we were also happy. We woke up, made a cup of coffee, sat outside in lawn chairs. And we were like, this is, I think, what it is. This is what we need. So I sat down with myself and I was like, can I do rent and a mortgage? Because when we were thinking of leaving this apartment, we also got sad. We love this apartment. So we were like, let's go look. Let's go look. Let's just take one day. We heard about this area that a bunch of artists live in. And the area is, it's 50 minutes from Manhattan, but it feels like a different world. It's a lake community. And we looked at one house and I was like, we're just looking. We're looking today, babe. We're looking. First house I didn't even walk into because I was like, someone definitely got murdered here. 100%. I was like, spiritually, I was like, well, I can't even go in there. Then we looked at some other houses and they were cute. And then we saw this one house that had a view and a backyard that you can't make or buy, or, you know, it just was. And the house needed work, but we can see it. We can see those things. And we sort of were like, I don't know. We were standing in the backyard and sort of looked at each other and we're like, this might be it. And then we put an offer in a house on that house over lunch an hour later. And then we closed a few months later and that's our house. And
it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. I'm so glad we did it. Knock on wood still too, but like,
yeah.
I'm so glad that we did it. And again, putting it out there, being like, this is what I want, and listening to the clues that tell you it's actually going to be this, and this is what you're going to do. Like what you were talking about before, how the 7-year goal for you became mm-hmm. 2 years.
Yeah.
That was sort of the house. We said, all right, let's do this. And then it came to us much, much quicker than we thought. I think that can happen to a lot more people if they set that date and they set that time.
Yeah. And listen to the struggle. So if you're looking at brownstones and it's feeling uncomfortable, listen to that struggle.
Yeah.
It's trying to tell you something, right? And I want to remind people that there's no right answer. There's your right answer.
Right, right, right.
Your dream home is someone else's nightmare.
Right.
Right. Right.
Oh my God. When people are literally like, we don't know how you're remodeling. I could never do that in a million years. And for Remy and I, we're like, it is the most relaxing thing for us because it gets us out mm-hmm. of our head. It's problem solving. But for other people, they're like, could never, would never, will right. never. And I think that is so funny. But for me, a huge thing was because I have my business, you know, I have my business. It was very, very, very important to me in my heart and also mm-hmm. whatever that we stayed in New York City and found a place yeah. that we could easily access. And turns out we're at the house split between the city, but we have a place in the city that is home as well. And that is very, very important to me because I am a New Yorker and I am a proud New Yorker. But I also need a lake house to like decompress and mm-hmm. bake and use a different part of myself that then I can come to the city and feel refreshed. We have to wrap up, which really, really, mm-hmm. really blows because I could talk to you forever.
Likewise.
But I do want to wrap up with the conversation that we were mm-hmm. going to talk about
yeah.
incorporating taxes. What are the things that artists need to know about incorporating?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you incorporate? When do you incorporate? Taxes. How does an actor, an artist, a producer do taxes? Someone new mm-hmm. doing taxes. Mm-hmm. What do we have to know?
So the first thing that I really want people to understand about this is that there is a lot of misinformation out there. Please don't Google for this information. Just please, I'm begging you. There are services constantly in my social feed giving people misinformation. And it's the first thing you want to ask yourself is if there is a social video telling you that you must incorporate, take a look at what that company does. Oh, they sell incorporation services. Ha ha. Like it's not that complicated. This is not guidance and advice. You want to actually speak to a professional, a CPA who can actually guide you on this. And you want to make sure that they understand artists and that they work with creatives routinely. I say that, and then I also, my shoulders immediately go up because I'm like, be careful of anyone that says they specialize, right? Because that's also a little bit of marketing. But here is the true what's so of it. You don't need to have an LLC or a corporation. You can operate as an individual. You will not save taxes by creating an entity. Your taxes are going to be basically the same. You might trade one type of tax for another type of tax, And that's where people get confused because they'll be told you're going to save on what's called self-employment tax, which I'll explain in a second. But what they don't realize is, oh, I'm going to save on self-employment tax, but then you're going to pay corporate tax. So what is the trade-off? So we really want to look at your unique circumstances. The times that you want to make the decision to create an LLC or to create a corporation, and those are legal entities, right? So it's what I say, for tax purposes, there's no such thing as an LLC. That's a whole other talk that I give. We'd have to do that in a whole separate episode. So what I want people to know is that when you create something like that, it's because the people that are hiring you want you to have an entity. That should be the trigger. It's not a dollar amount. It's not saving taxes. It's when it's required for your business to grow. So when I meet with people for the first time, I listen for where their business is headed. What are the things they're doing? Who's hiring them? If you're working in television, they're treating you as an employee anyway. You don't need a corporation, right? If you're working on Broadway, we decide when it's the right time for you to have a corporation. The main thing that you need to do especially when you are just starting out, is have a separate business, a separate bank account that you use strictly for business. So if you are Michael Kushner and you have a business of Michael Kushner Photography, you're just starting out, you want to have a personal account in your name. And you want to have a business account that could also just be in your name. You don't have to pay extra fees to the bank to have a business account as a what's called a sole proprietor, just a business owner without any sort of entity wrapper around it. So you just need a separate account where all of your income goes in and all of your expenses go out. Now you're organized. You don't have to save receipts. You don't have to go through hoops to put together your information. It's all in one place. So unblend your personal from your business. That is the first action step that I want everyone to take. When I was doing some classes at AMDA, that was the first thing that I told them. Separate your personal and your business. This does a few things. Besides keeping it organized, another thing that it does is it gives you the ability to see when you're making enough money to pay yourself into your personal account, when you're making enough money to maybe give up some of those, what I like to call pathway jobs that people call side hustles, because you have enough and you're creating stability in your life. So we want to get to paying you routinely from your business. And there's a number of steps we take. But the very first thing that I want you to do is organize your life. Personal and business are separate.
That is so helpful. I mean, when I was writing my book and I had I have a section on protection, that's where I decided to put the talk about incorporating in, because and the research that I've done, and all people could, you're the first person to really say there's not a difference. And this is going to help
financially. There's a difference legally, but there's not a difference financially.
Correct. And then the legal difference is that it protects you as an entity. That's pretty much all that I've discovered and put in the book, was that like you incorporate when you want to protect yourself, because if someone comes for you, they don't come for you personally, and it protects you in that way. But are there other incentives for that?
Well, and I want to point to that as well. So it protects you legally by keeping it the assets of the business, what the business owns, is separate from what you own. We also want insurance for those purposes, right? Depending on, because insurance will pay any claims depending on the work you do. I always say to people, what is the likelihood someone is suing you? Like, if that's not as an actor, the likelihood that you're being sued is much smaller then, you know, potentially even as a photographer, if a light falls on someone,
God forbid.
Right? Like, yes, things like that can happen, right? Someone can get injured. So you want to think about that protection. Mm-hmm. But if someone is suing your corporation, if you did something so egregious to cause that suit, they're suing you personally too.
Right.
Right. So we want to think about legal protection, keeping, if the business owns things, your business owns equipment, we want that to be what the business owns separate from what you own personally. So entities, legal entities are about ownership. Mm-hmm. They're about legal protection for what the business owns versus what you own personally. And they're also important for the separation of your business and personal. But you can do that simply at the beginning with mm-hmm. bank accounts mm-hmm. to separate the dollars.
And then there's the also conversation of, you know, being put on payroll. Mm-hmm. From your business as well. And there's so many, right. But you know, for people just starting with their finances, that's not something that they need to worry about right. immediately. But I love that the separation between your business mm-hmm. entity and your personal accounts is really great. And then taxes. What, now we know that mm-hmm. Trump put into motion the SALT taxes, right? Which mm-hmm. sort of changed things. And then there was sort of a cap at $10,000 for just deductions. Is that still, like, what do artists have to know about taxes? And what is in effect now? What is helpful? What is untrue and what is true?
Great. So what you just pointed to, SALT, that stands for state and local taxes. That's part of what's called the itemized deductions. And this is something that everyone gets confused. Mm-hmm. Itemized deductions are not your business deductions. These mm-hmm. are two completely separate things. Hmm. So if you have freelance income, you get to deduct your expenses related to producing that income. So if you are, I'm going to keep using photographer because that's what we have, what I have in front of me. So if you're a freelance photographer and you have income in that business and you have expenses, equipment and travel and some dining out and supplies and support people that you hire, that's all deductible as part of the business. That has nothing to do with SALT and itemized deductions. Mm-hmm. Every individual gets to take a standard deduction or an itemized deduction that has to do with whether you own a home, have charitable contributions, state and local taxes, medical expenses. That's itemized versus standard deduction.
Interesting. See, mm-hmm. I was just sort of putting it all under the same umbrella as that it's all itemized.
Most people do.
Actually, a difference between, is there a limit on one of them versus the other? Or
so your standard versus itemized, there's an amount that you are allowed, which I don't remember this year's amount, because it changes every year. It's around 12,000-13,000 per person, and double that for married filing joint. If you're itemized deductions are more than that, you can take more, up to whatever is legally correct. There's no limit as long as you're working within all the different tax guidelines there. Completely separate from what we're talking about, which is people that have freelance income, artists, creatives, that have income coming in from all different sources and they are not working as an employee. All of your expenses, your headshots, your financial coach, your all of the accounting, the tax prep, all of those costs are part of your business expenses. You take all of your business income minus your business expenses, and that's called your profit, and that's what you pay taxes on. So it's completely separate, and you are not alone. Everyone collapses these things, and I spend my days uncollapsing them.
See, I'm even learning stuff on Dear Multihyphenate. I learn stuff on Dear Multihyphenate all the time. And Jody, it was so amazing to talk with you. I mean, this is so helpful, and we probably should do a part two. Where can people get in contact with you? How can people get behind you and support you and all that stuff?
Yes, thank you so much. So the website is financialinsighttraining.com. On Instagram, it's financial.insight.training. And you can get my book, which is called Financial Insight, Be the Author of Your Life Story, because every decision you make is writing your story. And please reach out, be in touch. I'm on TikTok too, Financial Insight Training. I can't even believe that. Trying to have some fun putting myself in front of the camera. So please support, please hit like, share, comment, all those things if you're following on social, because that's how the algorithm is going to find me. And what I want people to know is, just like you said earlier, you give away a lot of tips and information in my programs and in working with me and following me. I always want to give people the most precious thing that I have, which is my time. I want to coach you. I want to talk about your personal circumstances. So come be with me. I like to think of it as a big financial hug, and we're going to make everything financial feel better.
You are absolutely amazing. Thanks to Broadway Podcast Network, and thanks to you listening. Please follow Jody, and if you're new to me, follow Dear Multihyphenate on Instagram or at The Michael Kushner on Instagram and TikTok as well. I'm tired. All right, bye!
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.